A long weekend, but still lots of data and some market moves on Monday, and maybe more as more markets reopen from that long weekend, although much of the news, like the US PCE deflator, wasn't really that surprising. In line with expectations, Jerome Powell called it, but US manufacturing is growing at its fastest rate since 2022. So there's news. It's Tuesday, it's the 2nd of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. So at the start of this shortened week, the US dollar is sitting just over 105 on the DXY index. That's up 0.5% from the start of the week before, and the highest actually since February. The Aussie dollar is sitting just above 64.8 US cents, close to where it was at the start of the week last week. Over the same period, the euro is down about 0.9%. The pound ever so slightly up, but it's lost a lot of ground, of course, lately. Stock markets in many parts of the world have been out of action for a few days, but US equities for the 4 days of trading last week were fairly flat. The Nasdaq, for example, lost 0.2%, but big moves in bond yields overnight. 10-year treasuries are up 12 basis points to 4.32%. Sorry, Atrill is with me from NAB in Sydney. So bond markets are open on Monday, closed on Friday, of course, and it looks like they made the most of their first day back after Easter. So what was it? Was it the US, because we've had a bit of data, the US PCE number on Friday? We've had the manufacturing ISM this morning. So which one is responsible for this sharp move we've seen in bonds?
Morning, Phil. Yeah, when I got up this morning, I must admit, I was thinking, what am I going to write about today? Because nothing happened between the time that we left off on Thursday and certainly through the Asia session on Monday when they reopened. But then quick screen tap this morning, and we've seen some pretty violent reactions. You know, for me, the highlight is the backup that we've seen in US Treasuries. As you mentioned, I've got twos up 9 basis points. I've got tens up 12 basis points. Now, some of that move was clearly underway before the US manufacturing ISM, which is probably the standout release that we've had since Friday, more so perhaps than PCE, which we can touch on in a second. That headline index up to 50.3 from 47.8. That's the highest reading we've had, I think, since September 2022. And alongside that, the prices paid reading 55.8 from 52.5. I think that's the strongest read since about July 2022. So the market's clearly taken notice of that. The caveat that I would always surround manufacturing data in the US is it represents only about 10% of the economy, but that's a nicety the markets have chosen to ignore. But even before we had those numbers, remember Fed Chair Powell spoke at a Q&A Fed event on Friday after the PCE inflation data had come out, but into a closed US bond and stock market. And he described the PCE data as coming in line with expectations, but said the economy is strong, so the Fed doesn't need to be in a hurry to cut rates. Now, arguably, that simply echoes what we heard from Fed Governor Waller the day before, but I think coming out of the mouth of the Fed chair, I think it clearly has resonated with US bond markets this morning. As I say, that bond market sell-off was well underway before that manufacturing ISM came out.
So that US PCE deflator number, as we keep saying, this is the inflation number that the Fed likes to use. I mean, it didn't move a great deal, though, did it, really, unless you sort of moved to the second decimal place, and then maybe it was close.
Well, I'm a fan of my second decimal places, particularly when it comes to inflation numbers. So although we had the headline number 0.3, which was the very strong consensus, it was 0.26 on an unrounded basis. So not that far off coming as a 0.2. And a rise and an upward revision to the January number from 0.4 to 0.5 was flagged by a lot of analysts, given the detail of the PPI and CPI numbers that we had since the original release has come out. But again, that rise was to 0.45%, so a very low 0.5. So, so sort of overs and unders, arguably. But and I suppose the important thing is if you look at things like 3 and 6 month annualized PC deflator rates, which had been running at actually a little bit below 2% as of December, they're both running much closer to 3% now. But if you do believe, and I think the data tends to support the view that the January spike was for something of an outlier, then you know, you'd have to say that the fast forward a couple of months, that those PC deflators, you know, could be back knocking on the door of 2%. But I can hear the critics in the background saying, but what about prices paid in manufacturing? And certainly it is the case that this era of goods market deflation, you know, seems to have come to an end, and those prices paid numbers would certainly support that view.
And we get the services numbers, don't we, today, just going back to the ISM. So we'll see, you know, what the what that's doing. I think that's today, isn't it?
I think
it?
I said on Wednesday, I think, Phil.
Oh, Wednesday. So you're right. Yeah, yeah. And so, and just going back to those PCE numbers then. So not just the prices, but also expenditure. So a big rise in expenditure up in current dollars, 0.8% for the month. So that's actually rising. Spending is actually rising much more than income is rising. So people are, you know, clearly dipping into their savings still.
Absolutely. And the savings rate was down. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it was the lowest number that we've seen in many months. I think it was high twos or low threes anyway. But the point is that you're right, that consumers are sustaining their spending by drawing down, by saving less out of current income. This is on top of the fact that we know that the excess savings accumulated in that sort of pandemic era, you know, have almost been exhausted. And those that still have excess savings tend to be those with much higher incomes who are less inclined to spend it in the first place. So, you know, it does look like the consumer is certainly, you know, consumer spending looks good for Q1, but I think big question marks over what happens with Q2. And just on Q1, we might mention that actually Q4 GDP was actually revised up a couple of tenths on Friday. And I've seen that the latest Atlanta Fed's GDP Now cast estimate for Q1 GDP that was running, I think, at 2.1 at the beginning of last week, nudged up to 2.3 late last week, and I think is at 2.8% on the latest iteration. So if you think that trend GDP growth is something like 1.8, and as we get closer to the you know, the actual Q1 GDP release later this month, those GDP Now ones take on more significance. It's looking as though we've got another above trend GDP report to come in for the first quarter.
So there's a bit of secondary data as well out of the US, which you probably shouldn't spend too much time on, given it's, you know, we've had some big numbers. So, but the University of Michigan inflation expectations, they're moving down, but still at 2.9% year on year. So they're moving down slowly. I mean, given that, you know, the core PC number has sort of already got us down below that level. I mean, why? I mean, and consumer sentiment has nudged higher in that survey as well. So why are people hanging on to this expectation of 2.9% a year out?
Well, you're right, that 1 year rate is 2.9, but the Fed has always focused more on the 5 to 10 year inflation expectations. Not that I think consumers any more than economists really know where inflation is going to be 5 to 10 years out, but at 2.8% is actually nearer the lower end of the recent range. So I don't think that's troubling from an inflation point of view, but what was noticeable is the consumer sentiment index itself had a big upward revision, 79.4 up from 76.5. So, you know, despite what we were just saying about, you know, incomes falling and people drawing on savings, it does seem that they're still feeling in pretty buoyant mood.
So, I mean, yeah, this is like the soft landing scenario, isn't it? So we've got inflation slowing, we've got manufacturing picking up, we're spending is still okay. Job losses, we haven't mentioned that, but the jobless claims moved a bit lower as well last week. So job losses seemingly falling. I mean, it's all good news from the US.
Well, arguably, if you take the numbers literally, it's more of a no landing scenario, I'd suggest, rather than a soft landing. Soft landing, I think, has to mean that growth comes down to no better than trend. And at the moment, the evidence isn't there. I do believe that Q2 will look quite a bit different from you know, from Q1. And just going back to Fed Chair Powell's comments, you know, he said the Fed is thinking about both its maximum employment, or he's thinking about both its employment and inflation goals. And it's, remember, its employment goal is maximum employment, and that any unexpected labor market weakness could draw a Fed response. So you know, I do think that the next couple of months we're going to be as focused on labor market numbers as we are on inflation numbers. And if we do start to see clear signs that you know, the unemployment rate is trending up, and you know, PCE inflation looks to be edging back down, then I think, you know, it's still too early to rule out the Fed's first rate cut coming in June. Although I noticed that money markets, you know, are much closer to 50-50 now on the chances of the Fed enacting a first cut in June. And if I look at where markets are priced for the end of this year, they've only got something like 65 basis points of cut cuts priced in. Go back to last Wednesday before Fed Governor Wallace spoke. That was more like 77 basis points. So the market's now saying less than the Fed's median dot for the number of rate cuts this year, which is interesting.
Well, China's interesting as well, isn't it? I picked up actually a hard copy of the China Daily over the weekend, which is full of coverage about President Xi meeting with industrialists from around the world. But also this quote, an analysis of the trends of labour, capital and total factor productivity, key determinants of economic output from a production function perspective, reveals that China has the potential to achieve a sustained economic growth of around 4.5% until 2035. And, you know, we saw the manufacturing PMI number, which rose into expansionary territory, didn't we, over the weekend as well, from 49.1 to 50.8, which was more than expected, and a rise in services too. So the composite PMI is now looking at a very healthy 52.7. So we are seeing a bit of a bounce back happening in China.
No, absolutely. So strong numbers across the board. And if I average the Caixin together with the official manufacturing PMIs, I think we're up to 51 from 50.0, averaging those two. Construction PMI, which comes out separately, 56.2, up from 53.5. So that feeds into that that composite reading, if you like. But say services 53.0 from 51.4 is a very strong result. So, you know, Aussie dollar actually got a small, almost imperceptible lift on those numbers, but completely drowned out by the US dollar across the board gains for the reasons that we've just mentioned. But nonetheless, it does seem to be, you know, some pretty good evidence here, both the fiscal stimulus, you know, is starting to show through, particularly in that construction PMI, and that the consumer looks as though they're getting back into sort of reasonable fettle, at least anyway. You know, whether this is a 1 or 2 quarter phenomenon or something that can be sustained, and that China may well, you know, genuinely achieve that 5% growth target for this year remains to be seen. But, you know, certainly good news all round in those numbers.
We're going to talk about China in the weekend edition this coming weekend as well. Do a bit of a deep dive on that. Look, it's a less rosy picture for Japan, isn't it? Although we saw the Tokyo inflation numbers coming down, but the Tankan all industry capex number, which has been sitting around 13.5 for the last few quarters, suddenly dropped to 4% in Q1. You know, you would have thought they would be racing hard to try and sell more cars to compete with those Chinese cars, which are obviously doing incredibly well.
In which respect, worth noting that the dollar-yen exchange rate is edging back up towards the highs that we saw last week. So whether that also sees the Chinese yuan and moving higher in response. But I think certainly BOJ intervention is going to be very much on the market's radar this week. As you say, a few overs and unders in that Tankan report. Generally, the reports for the first quarter, you know, were a little bit better than expected, but then you look at the outlook numbers for sort of large manufacturing and large non-manufacturing, and they're actually a little bit weaker. And as you say, that all industry capex number, so that's how much firms expect to increase their capital expenditure in the year ahead, you know, was 13.5% year on year in the Q4 iteration, down to just 4% now.
And poor old UK, there was some hope, wasn't there, that maybe their GDP numbers would be revised and their very shallow recession might actually disappear in the revision, but it didn't. The numbers came out exactly the same, so they were in recession, possibly still are. And Canada, well, they are doing somewhat better, aren't they? So January's GDP came out higher than expected.
Yeah, so there's been some overs and unders in Canada data. I think the employment numbers that we're going to get on Friday together with US non-farm payrolls will probably be more important. If we do see the unemployment rate edging up, which it has been and is expected to rise further, then I think expectations for the Bank of Canada, you know, cutting rates no later than its June meeting are likely to ramp up.
Yeah, a lot happening, isn't there, in June, apparently, with central banks. So the CoreLogic Home Value Index for Australia, that was out yesterday or this morning, 1.6% growth for the March quarter, up 5.6% for Perth, 3.3% for Adelaide, 3% for Brisbane. Melbourne actually fell a bit in this last quarter. But this is all with a 9.5% increase in the volumes in Q1 over Q1 last year. So there's demand out there, and it's pushing prices up still. Also locally today, the RBA minutes today. So worth looking out for.
Well, yes, they are. But a couple of hours before that, remember, we've got Assistant Governor Chris Kent speaking at, I think he's at a Bloomberg forum. And I think that's at 9:05, according to my calendar. So I think keen interest there, basically, what he has to say. I don't know that we'll learn too much more. But certainly, I think the those in the rates market, at least, will be locked on to anything that he might say about the balance sheet. That very much comes under his sort of bailiwick as far as the internal RBA expertise is concerned. So there might be a ripple or two to come out of that. You know, the minutes, obviously, remember we had the statement a couple of weeks ago, it was read as a sign that the RBA has moved to a more of a neutral bias from that mild tightening bias that had characterised the previous meeting. So a little bit on the flesh on the bones, perhaps, of that. But again, with Governor Bullock now in the habit of giving those post-meeting press conferences, I think the minutes hold less attraction than they might have done in months past.
And we're being drip-fed Eurozone CPI numbers, aren't we? So we get the Eurozone number for the whole of the Eurozone tomorrow. I think we get German numbers today. We've already had them for Italy, sort of still, you know, at 0.1%. I think France fell to 0.2% in March. So we'll see what Germany does today, and we'll see how...
There was a big downside surprise, incidentally, in the French numbers. Yeah. So, you know, if we see the same thing in Germany today, then the current consensus, which is for pan-Eurozone inflation edging down to 3% from 3.1%, that looks to be potentially vulnerable to downward revisions, depending on what those German numbers show today.
Right. And that's it, really, for today, isn't it? Just about. And it's a busy week. We've got these payrolls at the end of the week. Anything else just to highlight very quickly before we go?
Probably the ISM services from the US. I think that's out Wednesday night. So, again, going back to the beginning, I was saying that services is close on 90% of the economy.
Yeah.
You know, if that were to mimic the you know, the rise that we'd seen in manufacturing, I think markets really will take notice. But on the other hand, if it is soft, then maybe those the strength of manufacturing may just fade a little bit into the background. But it's really all about payrolls on Friday.
So an interesting week ahead. Thanks for all of that. Catch you soon, Ray.
Will do. Thanks, Phil.
And that is the Morning Call for this Tuesday morning. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Back again tomorrow morning. See you then.